If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You're the apprentice hunter fighting to protect the town of Motavia. It's your chance to show off your skills and be the hero you've trained to be. But you soon learn that getting rid of a few irritating monsters isn't all you're destined to do. The Dark Force keeps evolving, so stay on your toes.
Welcome to episode 2 of Play Retro. I'm Scott Johnson, your host, who will probably say Final Fantasy instead of the Fantasy Star a bunch of times during this episode.
And I am your other host, Brian Dunaway. Oh, hi. And I will definitely mispronounce 90% of the Japanese names we mentioned on today's show. Hey, sometimes I get lucky.
Yeah, you're down to get lucky. Wait, you're up all night to get lucky, Brian.
I'm up all night.
He probably is up all night.
Almost retro. Look at that.
We have a third host today. Our third host is Brian's, his unwanted passenger. He has COVID. And so he's got these little COVID balls. hanging out with us today. They probably won't contribute anything to the discussion, but I say this knowing that everyone at home would agree with me. We all hope that you are quickly feeling better and that you'll be over this soon.
It's good because I got sick almost immediately after the show last week. And so I must have got it from one of you guys. And so and then I've had just about the maximum amount of time that would be possible for me to get better. So I'm getting there. I still have a little bit of COVID brain. I'm like a Motovian who's had too much monomate.
Oh, my Lord.
It's just that kind of way.
Wow. If this doesn't sound a little like we're hinting at what today's discussion is, you might be right. Okay, we'll get to this week's game shortly. I want to quickly do two things. I want to thank everybody for your massive acceptance of Play Retro starting last week. Nothing but great positive feedback. In fact, maybe a little too many people going, oh, I didn't know about this. But then I listened and I really liked it. And I'm like, oh, geez, don't be so skeptical up front. Just assume it's going to be good. But anyway, I'm glad that you were surprised and that you liked it and that you're going to stick around. And big thanks to everybody who's already supported us on Patreon. For example, if you're a patron right now and today, you can go watch Brian unbox the Atari fight stick.
Yeah, the fart stick is similar to that.
Yeah.
But it's a fight stick instead.
Yeah, it's a fight stick instead of fart. And you can watch him unbox that, which is cool. It's a very retro thing.
I unboxed it and also had a chance to play this a little bit. It's sitting right behind me as we speak. It probably knows we're talking about it.
Yeah, see.
And I got a chance to play a little bit of Joust, which we talked about on our first episode.
How did it play?
And I will tell you this right now. Now, I played Joust for last week when we were talking about it, but I did it with an Xbox controller through RetroArch. And it was trash. I thought I sucked.
Yeah.
I don't suck.
You don't
suck. I just didn't have a good arcade stick because I plugged this thing in and I was flying, flapping backwards and zipping up and down and between other, jousters and just taking everybody out, taking the high ground. And I was like, oh man, I didn't suck. My equipment sucked.
Yeah, your equipment sucked. So gotta have good equipment, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have that.
This modern controller doesn't do the things that the old controller needed.
No. Well, here's what it doesn't do. I guess the D-pad kind of does, but you need that stick in the middle. And then when you go left or right, in the case of Joust, it is only left or right. Or up and down on other games. You want that to be on and off. Ones and zeros. Wham, wham. No in between. No analog space between position A and position B. You want to just go chunk, 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 chunk. That's how those things were meant to be. And that's how Brian plays his games, damn it.
That's how I played it. And like I complained last week, I said I can't stay at the top of the screen without hitting the top and then falling down.
Yeah.
With the fight stick, I had no trouble. Now, this fight stick is the Micro Center fight stick. It's Atari Micro Center. and it has a trackball in the center so I can play some Centipede later on. And it is a lot more modular than I thought it would be, because everything the way it's in there, you can just replace it with so many other parts. They're all available online. And I was like, oh, great. I thought it was just plug and play, but and it is, and it's plug and play, but it also is very configurable, and that scares me because you know I'm a fiddler.
You
I'm
are a fiddler.
On the roof.
Yep. If there's a roof, you'll be fiddling on it. I get it.
I'll be fiddling it.
I played that Joust MMO thing that we found like 3 or 4 times last week. I loved it. It's
I played it again yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I must say, I dominated.
I did too. I wrecked fools. I played the core guys on Thursday, and I destroyed them.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, yeah. They had no chance. And this is like the only time I can say that. John and Bob technically dominate me in any competitive game. That's just how it is. But not Joust, where we're all flying around. F off, mother effers. Anyway, so yeah, we'll get right into all of that. Also, I have a new, so this is a little bit reminiscent of last week, but we talked a bunch about VR and doing retro within a VR environment, and we talked about EMU VR. Is that how they say it? Or is it EMU VR? How do they say it?
I say EMU VR, but you could just say EMU VR, but that's too many syllables for me. Not for me.
No. All right. Well, then I'm just going to say EMU VR is what I'll say.
Right.
I've got a new headset coming that will let me get in there proper. I'm doing it right now on desktop, and it's cool, but I want to do that the way it was designed to be. So that'll be happening. And then I noticed something. Did you see these this new Pro line coming from those 1UP Arcade people? They announced it at CES. Oh. So here's the deal. Yes. No price, no pictures, except we've been told these will be full-size cabinets. So they're going to make not the little ones with the standers or any of that. It's going to be like a full-size cabinet. They'll still have 2 or 3 games on them. They'll have the primary one will be what all the art on the side and front and kind of the duplication of the machine's look and feel is going to be based on, you know, one chief title. The one they announced it with was Killer Instinct, a game I don't care fantastic. That much for. I don't like
Killer Instinct. You don't like Killer Instinct? No. I like it. They're talking my language.
Yeah, it's just a thing of its time, and it was kind of cool at the time, but I don't know if I can deal with Killer Instinct now. But anyway, they didn't give a price. The rumor is we're going to be in the $600 range, and the question for you is, if another one of these cabinets comes out and it's full size, so like real arcade authenticity in terms of height, width, and all that, and weight, is that worth it? Let me rephrase the question. If that's all you do with it, is it worth it? Or if you put a Raspberry Pi in that bugger, you know, and within a couple of days you're playing 10,000 MAME.
Everybody I know who's ever looked at an arcade 1UP has always said, well, yeah, I'm going to get it, but then I'm going to immediately, you know, throw the Retro Pi in there so I can play all my games, because it's really limited. You know, they usually distribute like 4 or 5 games on most of those machines. Yeah. Is that right?
Usually, depends on the machine, but I think mine, like my Joust one in the other room, has Joust, Rampage, Gauntlet, and one other game.
And that's a heavy hitter. That's a good one.
Yeah. I think it's only 4, though. I forget what the 4th game is. It's pretty good, but it's a little tiny cabinet.
I was hearing rumors that the price was going to be closer to $15, so it'd be in between the $3,000 that you could expect at the lower end of getting a real arcade machine, and you know the cheap things that are super short that no one can play.
Well,
because they're so small.
I talked about it a lot last week, and I'll bring it up in this context again. But when my dad ran and owned arcades, it was not unusual that most of your average cabinets, like let's just say a sit down cocktail model for Pac-Man, $3,500 to $4,000. And that's in 1982, 83 prices. So imagine what they'd be today if you're buying full size cabinets. But that's one game. It's one main board. It's the CRT. It is what it is. And that's what you paid back in those days. So if you were going to run an arcade and wanted, you know, I don't know, 30 machines in your arcade, you were spending 30 times $5,000.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money. And so even if this thing is like right around $1,500 and you get 2, 3, 4 games, it's still an insane value if you're going to compare it to those old days.
I could compare it to other prosumer type equipment that you might find in other areas. It's going to be top of the line. You can get without actually crossing the threshold of, okay, I'm really dedicated. I want a real authentic arcade machine in my house. And to me, I guess it's really according to how much room you have. I don't have as much room as I would like. I'd have to have my own arcade room, and I just don't know if I can sell that right now. Maybe you out there listening land can tell me how you're handling it, because I had to boot a kid out of the house or something. Yeah. Where am I going to put that at?
I'd love to have it. I mean, I've got enough room in the studio over there. Nobody can see this on camera, but I have enough room where I could probably put 5 arcade machines, but that's really expensive, you know? That's not cheap.
I don't remember arcades being hot, but for some reason, when I think about 5 arcade machines in a very small room, I'm like, God, is it hot here?
It'll get
hot. Or is it just me? Yeah.
It'll get hot. The old stuff, especially. The stuff today, it's so easy to emulate that without any. Whew. You don't really need fans now. But back in the day, those transformers would generate a lot of heat. My dad, the arcade we had at the mall, they had to do something special with ventilation because it got so hot in there. Can't remember what it was.
Oh, I can believe it. They put a big hole in the walls, what they did.
Because it used to be like a hot dog on a stick or some shit like that. And then they changed it.
Oh, my God, that would be even worse.
I know. I can't remember what the deal was. There was something about that. I was in junior high. It was a long time ago, so I don't remember. But anyway, times are a-changing, Brian. They're a-changing.
And so you're probably going to find a lot of times Scott had a real intimate relationship with the physical hardware growing up with your family, and you're probably going to always be kind of leaning towards that physical experience. And I'm very much an emulator because I'm like, I like space. I like, I don't need it. I don't need the physical part as much.
I don't as much as I did either. Most of my world now these days, if I can get things digitally, I do. I barely ever buy a disc for anything. Really, it's just whatever hardware it is to run the thing. But there is something deeply nostalgic about the physicality of a big arcade cabinet.
And that's what's great about this Atari Fight Stick that I got is essentially just the control part of the game for an arcade cabinet and without the cabinet. So I don't have to worry about 19-inch CRT, this tube cathode depth.
Yeah.
That stuff is crazy.
Giving you 6 kinds of cancers you don't even know the names for.
Yeah.
It's over there just humming away, a transformer that retains its power past like its half-life stage of 1,000 years or whatever. Like those things were beasts. They were beasts.
Yeah. But they do offer, don't get me wrong, I'm not hating on that kind of stuff. I love going places. We have a local arcade where I can go in, and I love going in there and hearing the noises and the sounds and the smells, all the smells.
Oh, all the smells. There's something to it. You're right. You're right. I don't know what it is. It's like some people feel this way about movie theaters. I don't have that kind of connection to a movie theater, not like I did when I was younger. So it doesn't really do it for me to go, oh, but I got to see this in a movie. I just don't need that anymore. But if you're saying to me, hey, we're going to go look at an old arcade, even if I'm not meant to spend a dime while I'm there, it's fine with me. I just love it. Love it. Sexy. Love it. All right.
It is sexy. The sounds more than anything are probably the things.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like, I mean, look, listen here. We're in the arcade. You can hear it. This would be circa 1992 right here.
What's the proper term for the hey, look at me that arcade machines do? I always call it the hey, look at me, but what's the proper term?
Okay, well, Sinistar would go.
Mode, maybe?
Sinistar would go, what would it do? It would, I am Sinistar. And it would basically try to get you over there.
I am Sinistar.
Yeah.
How are you?
How are you?
Come talk to me. Would your girlfriend like a flower?
Marble Madness had a guitar riff that would go.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure Gauntlet said something to get you to get over there. Don't remember what.
Yeah. I mean, Mortal Kombat just, it totally dominated the arcade in my mind with this get over here's and that kind of stuff. Nothing else attracted me quite like Mortal Kombat. They had my number.
Well, that would have been the era when, those kinds of sound chip technologies were starting to really come into their own, and they had actually were good at attracting you to get you over there. But if you contrast this is 92 here, and now contrast that with 81.
So much slower.
Yeah, we improved our reaction times by 1992. 10 years,
did
though.
We?
I mean, this is all Space Invaders. You can hear like really old shit in there. Oh, it brings me back, dude. Freaking brings me back. All right. Well, now we're going to talk about a thing you never played in an arcade that you only plugged into your TV. but you did it in the 90s, so it's retro. Check it out.
Yeah.
Shall we play a game?
We definitely shall. The game we're talking this week is the classic Phantasy Star 4, the 1995 North American release anyway, and the Sega Genesis being the platform. If you're not familiar with the Phantasy Star, I say it slow because I don't want to say Final Fantasy to screw this up this
you're
week.
You're doing good.
They both, by the way, had 30-year anniversaries recently-ish.
They did. You know, Phantasy Star 4 came out in 93 in Japan, and then due to localization, you know, it took a while for them to get it released in North America. They almost didn't get it in North America because of localization and the cost associated with it.
Yeah, it was really expensive. And to the point that, I don't know if people realize this or remember this, this was unheard of at the time, but this was a Genesis cartridge, one of the 24 megabyte
Yes.
cartridges, which meant that's how much storage, you know, that's how much data was on the thing, which at the time seemed like, oh my gosh, 24 megabytes, holy shit, like we'd lose our minds. But it it featured a battery backup, which hardly any games did, and yes. It cost you $99 in 1995 money.
$99. Yeah. That was that, and that's why I never played this game. Back when it was on originally released on the Sega Genesis, there was no way I was pumping out. That was one of those, what is this game? Is this some kind of weird import? I'm not playing this. Mm-hmm. I don't have $99. Yeah. Go back.
It's a lot of money. The closest thing they had to it was Sega's 32X version of Virtua Racer, which yes. was also very expensive, not even including the 32X add-on. One of these days we're going to do a whole episode on that weird thing. And actually all of Sega's weird hardware detours, they did some weird stuff post Genesis.
Sega is one of my favorite, is going to be one of my favorite companies to talk about because they almost entirely exist at their height during what we consider the retro age, which is like mid 70s to late 90s in our assessment.
Yeah. Like today you'd be like, oh, look, Sega published the new Warhammer Total War 3 game, right. or, you know, some brand new 2022 title. And you're like, man, Sega, look at them. Yeah, they're a great publisher now. They do all kinds of cool stuff mm-hmm. now. There's no question about it. But there was a time, a stretch, where they were in a heated freaking
yes,
blood to the death battle with Nintendo for dominance at the home. And we're talking about that era. That's where we're at today with this game. Yeah.
Console wars. And that's why I found Phantasy Star 4 to be interesting. First, because I've been playing my Genesis recently. And so I just kind of like said, you know, I never played it back in the day. Let me take a look at it. And I did. And I was blown away because, you know, JRPGs, I've seen a lot of them. And I had never played this series, even though Genesis was my homeland, right? That was where that's where I mostly played at. I had the Master System, the Genesis. I pretty much stayed in that area. I didn't even have, Scott, you know, I didn't even have any Nintendo consoles that were first, like I didn't go out and get an NES or an SNES or any of those things. Yeah, I didn't.
You were all Sega. You were Master System.
I was
System.
All Sega.
Yeah. Why do you suppose that was? What drew you to that as opposed to the other thing? You think it was just luck?
I don't know if I was just a minute too late because, you know, Sega, you've seen Console Wars, right? The documentary.
Really, really good.
Paramount. Yeah, it's on Paramount Plus right now. It's also an audiobook. That's how I consumed it the first time. Mm. And you find out that during that era that they knew in America that Nintendo already had the young people, the very young, the kids. That was what Nintendo was doing.
Sure.
And so they said, let's target the teenagers. And so I was right on the cusp of that. So, hey, Sega.
Yeah, no, I get you. It appealed to me too. And I was Genesis had been out. I forget how long. Well, whatever it was. I got married in 92 and I was 22, almost 23 when I got married.
Right.
And I remember feeling like Sega was talking to my generation as well. It didn't feel like...
Screaming.
Yeah, they were screaming at me and they were making fun of Nintendo and they were like, Nintendo's slow, we're fast, and all this BS about blast processing and all that stuff. But I really feel like that kind of punk rock sort of guerrilla game attitude thing is one of the best representations of it is Fantasy Star Online, or I did it. I just screwed it up.
You did Fantasy it. No, Star it's PH Fantasy, right?
Four.
Fantasy Star.
I'm going to do this all show. I promised at the top and I meant it. I'm going to F this up constantly because the names screw me up. The fantasy in there really throws me. But anyway, Fantasy Star 1, 2, and 3, these were not on Genesis. Genesis, first version Genesis ever got was right. 4, and 4 is all she wrote until the game started diversifying into other areas. There's no 5, 6, or 7 or any of that. There's like
other games. That's one of the reasons why I also picked Fantasy Star 4 is because it exists almost entirely within our timeline. There are some things that happened later on in some smaller offshoots, but really Final Fantasy 4 was the end of this JRPG that was right there at the beginning with many other JRPGs and the popularity exploding both here in the U.S. and in Japan and all across the world. And it was right there with them running just as fast and doing just as many interesting things as the others. And sometimes people forget about the Fantasy Star
Or maybe series. Even more interesting, because honestly, if you look back at it, they were doing a very different, like everybody did JRPGs from the side. This is a very small combat thing, but you know, it's this like little side thingy. These guys were like, hey, what if it was just over their backs and we were doing almost a first person shooter view sort of, and what if we were more iconic about the abilities, like instead of just pure menus, what if some cool graphical images came up that showed, you know, this is a spell, this is a sword, this is a thing, and like really brought the player a more visceral sort of, I don't know, graphical approach to things. My only thing I don't like is, and I know it's something you like, but I don't like it. I think it's probably okay. It's good for the game in the long haul, but I hate the anime cutscenes. I freaking hate
them. Oh, come on. The manga cutscenes are one of the defining factors and one of the things that I love probably the most about this. It's also kind of a disconnect, but I love about Phantasy Star 4, especially. You have these cutscenes and you either love them or you hate them usually. Mm-hmm. And I love them because it deepens the story. It bridges the imagination gap. And they're doing that a lot here from the manual that is included to those manga cutscenes. Because if you're looking at the actual game itself, where I talked about, it's a 24 megabit cartridge already trying to fit all the graphics they have in there.
Yeah.
And so you've got these still scenes that take the graphics to another level. So it bridges that gap a little bit.
It sure tries. I actually think the game's better for it. And it certainly at the time was a lot more immersive than your average storytelling methods these games employed most of the time. But the other thing that made it kind of metal was the soundtrack. Metal. Check this out, this intro theme here.
This sound is amazing.
Intense, and then it's really cranking here. See, that's cool, right? Very cool. It's very
I love it.
Yeah. Now, I found a really cool metal cover of this. I just want to share a tiny bit of it. Listen to this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good, dude.
Oh, that is so metal.
Yeah. It's good, right?
See why this appeals to me? I mean, it was everything Nintendo, right? It was,
yeah. If you really bought into the marketing, they really did do. They made this attempt to make their stuff edgy in a way that wasn't all that edgy, but it kind of like Final Fantasy. That's a game where everybody's at least the early games were not very science fiction at all. They had some trappings, but for the most part, it's wizards and dude with a sword and magical creature and, you know, and that's fine. Yeah. But it's a nice little approach or whatever. And I'm not saying this is Nintendo, that's Square, obviously, but they were primarily known for publishing on Nintendo platforms. This game is like, well, we have swords and we have wizardry and we have magic, but we also have robots and tanks and space and ships and aliens and all sorts of wackadoo shit in our strange world. And I think that just is the most Sega thing you could have done to try to compete with something like Final Fantasy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, because we had Al Nilsson over at Sega telling us that blast processing was the way to go. By the way, that's the same guy who did the Reebok pump. You remember that? Remember pumping up your shoes?
Yeah, you're
pumping
up your kicks. That's that guy?
Yeah.
That makes all the sense in the world. Hold on a second. So the guy that fed us a load of garbage that was blast processing that never really existed.
Yes.
He's the same guy that said, if you pump up your shoes, you're going to have better performance on the basketball court. When really that didn't do shit either. He is brilliant and also a horrible liar. That's an amazing story. I freaking love that. Oh my gosh.
I love that guy. I mean, Tom Kalinske, a lot of people probably have heard about with, you know, console wars and everything he brought to Sega. He really did some amazing things for Sega. And it was such a glorious rock show to watch what happened with Sega and them fighting, management over at Sega Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And just seeing them just go down in flames at the end. But it was such a great ride.
That was such an amazing ride. And by the way, they went out really strong. That Dreamcast was legit. The problem is...
Yes.
You left a
Saturn
nice...
Saturn was not.
No. And that's the problem, is you left this nice fat window there for Sony to come in with all its money, heft, and momentum, and just knock you out of the race. And if anything... You know, Nintendo just showed how resilient they can be regardless of what happens. They're just Nintendo, and they are what they are, and they'll always be what they are. And there's no taking Nintendo down. There's only disrupting the market enough for Nintendo to go and pivot a little and do something weird. That's all you can do to Nintendo. But in Sega's case, they were trying to outdo them, and they did. There were moments of glory, like moments of you've done it. You did it. There was a point during the 16-bit era where the Genesis straight up by the numbers overtook the SNES not the longest period, but a chunk of it. And I remember, if you were paying attention to the console wars, quote unquote, back then, it was a big moment. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it was.
They did it. They took down the biggest there is. How do you do that? And then they made a series of weird choices and.
Yeah, and Phantasy Star was right in the middle of all of that. So how did this get made? How did they make Phantasy Star 4? Well, previously, Phantasy Star 3, which kind of took a departure from what 1 and 2 did with the series, because most of the development team moved over to developing Sonic.
Yeah, they became Sonic the Hedgehog, team, basically. Yeah.
Right. So they were heavily involved with that. So they didn't really mess with 3 much. And 3 kind of took a departure. But then... after the success of Sega America and some of the things that were going on, that gave Sega a little bit more room to move. And as a result, Sega approached the development team and to bring them a Phantasy Star 4. And the team was already, chomping at the bits to do it. And so what a great time for this to be made, that it's a time that your company wants it, and a time that you have the energy and resources to do it, and to do it the way you want to, and to fix everything you didn't like about 1 and 2 and 3.
Yeah, here's a great actually, you posted some of this in here, an interview in 1993. This was featured in Beep. There was a magazine called Beep.
Yes, it was a magazine called Beep.
Wow, we were ahead of our time with Boop. Anyway, it says, how did the PS4, meaning that sounds wrong now, so you have to say it, Phantasy Star 4 development get started? Yoshida said it was some really good timing. Right as we were thinking about doing another Phantasy Star, Sega asked if we would make another. After that, I went around the office asking people what they'd like to work on, if they'd like to work on it, and so development officially got underway. Then Kodama adds, that's also partly why this development was a lot of fun. I think we, the developers, started the project on our own initiative, and many people on the team had worked on PS2, or Phantasy Star 2, and were able to address the shortcomings and unfinished ideas that they had from that game into Phantasy Star 4. And I think that says a lot about why 4 is considered vastly superior to the previous 8-bit iterations of that game.
Right. And Yoshibon, who you just mentioned, he was the character designer behind all of this. And that's some of my favorite parts of this game. But besides the music, is the character design. The writing's weird, maybe, because I'm an American and the localization of the story, was... retooled for me. I can't say how great the original story holds up in that context, but it's interesting. I find it always exciting. So it's I just think they had something special here that just kind of, it was lightning in a bottle, and I hate that it couldn't carry on. But then again, the JRPG landscape is so full of just great role-playing games.
Oh, there's an amazing bunch of games. The difference, I think big difference here, the reason you don't have the exact same kind of staying power with Phantasy Star that you did with Final Fantasy. And Final Fantasy now has an MMO and a million offshoots and a million separate games and remakes. And you know, just one after another, it's one of the great venerable series of all time, despite its name. It was never final. Nothing was ever final.
It was never final. Liars.
Liars. All liars. But that this game didn't experience that sort of thing. And I think part of that is just when Sega hit their height and then kind of got weird, well, then the money got weird. And then the who's in charge of what got weird. And then, well, what is our IP even worth got weird. And it's not that they didn't do anything. We've had Phantasy Star Online 1 and 2. Those are very different kinds of games. I would say that those are also very influential. And games like Destiny, that's the other one with the weird alien dudes. That's a four-player co-op shooter thing, behind the back thing. What's that called? Damn it. Never remember that.
Oh, word. That's a... describe one more time, please.
Weird looking, alien-headed looking dudes. They all... Their whole bodies... They're called Warframe. Warframe. That's what I meant. Oh. Warframe's another good example. I would even argue Diablo and games with loot. Someone in the chat says Borderlands, also a very good example. These games owe a lot to those early Phantasy Star Online games, which yes. The first one I played was on a... Dreamcast. That's where I played it.
Yeah.
And I had the modem thing. Well, I had a modem built into it, so I was playing on that weird thing. And that was such a weird time. But yeah, like it's not that you can't look at Phantasy Star and have some respect, because it's easy to. But it didn't have the heft and momentum that Final Fantasy did. And so what I would like to see in the future would be somebody reviving this in a really meaningful way. Like really right. Modernize it, go nuts with it. Final Fantasy VII Remake is a good example. Excuse me, what I'd like to see. And if they straight up took Final Fantasy, did it again. If they straight up took Phantasy Star 4 and made a modern, big 3D, beautiful next gen remake out of that, voice it, have it, you know, real time combat it, whatever you got to do. Holy shit. I'd sign up
for that right now.
Yep. I'd play that game.
And then I would claim it was Scott's idea.
Yeah, it was my idea. Once it got bad reviews, you could say it was my idea, my terrible idea. Yeah, it was the broad.
I loved one thing we might need to approach eventually in one of our episodes is all the weird ways we tried to get connected through the decades, especially during the 90s with, I don't know if you remember the Sega Channel.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Sega Channel?
I didn't pay any money to have anything to do with it, but it was basically a cable channel, right?
It was somewhat like a cable channel. So they were transferring data over cable. So you would essentially stick in a cart. So you didn't have to modify your Genesis or you didn't have to modify your devices any. It was a cart and it basically plugged into the cable and it was a channel and it would run and repeat data chunks for games that were being served during a certain time. So it would take a certain amount of time for those data chunks to reach your machine and load up and cycle through. But then you pay a monthly charge. What a weird, arcane way to handle all that. But we were trying, man, even back during the night. We wanted to be online so bad we could take it.
Well, I mean, that's an early example of where we're all at now. It's just that we had to make these baby steps. Sometimes they were really weird and ahead of their time. And I always feel bad for tech leaders during the time of transition who truly like innovate or push something forward in a way that seems nuts, but it works somehow. They don't get the long-term success out of it. Usually what happens is someone else sees that, iterates on that, next guy iterates on that, and before you know it, big names like Apple, Microsoft.
You don't get
Apple,
rich
Microsoft,
inventing stuff,
and,
Scott.
No,
don't
you don't.
Get rich inventing.
You don't. You inventors, there's exactly right. So it kind of bums me out to be reminded of this. Because I'd kind of forgotten about it. For those who don't know, I'm going to bring up a picture here at home. People are in the chat. If you're at home, you're not going to be able to see this. But it was basically this weird-looking cable box.
Yeah, it's got a little RF connector on the back of it where you plug it in the cart like you normally would. It's got its own little power button and menu button thing.
Yep. You can see. Let's see. I'm trying to find it where it's actually plugged into a... Well, there it is. There you can see it with the actual plug part of it. It's basically just a cartridge with this hardware on it. Not that unlike their Game Gear TV attachment, which plugged into a Game Gear cartridge port. I respect that stuff. I love that because nobody else was trying to do this stuff back then. You know, like
no,
it's weird. It's freaking weird.
In trying to involve that infrastructure of cable and you know, but it's such a brilliant idea, and I never got to experience it. It just wasn't. I don't even think we even had cable. I think we were all satellite at that point in time. So I had seen it and just discounted it and said, nah, Can't do that anyway.
I mean, we all just sort of blink when we talk about Game Pass or any other modern type service now, and we don't even think twice about it. It just works, and there it is, and what it is. But these are all pioneers in that way. You know,
the infrastructure is in place, and it's easier to get onto the highway now. Yeah. But it's but you could have played this game. You could have played Fantasy. You got me doing it now. You could play Phantasy Star 4. Yeah. It definitely was one of the games that filtered through on the channel, which would be way cheaper. What's it like, $24 or something a month? Way cheaper than the $99 you would have seen if you head down to the store, man.
Have you ever bought a game that was $100?
Have I ever bought a game that was $100? That's a good question. I don't recall purchasing a game. Now, I could now, but, you know.
Well, you could now, but most of it would be like collector's editions or.
That's pretty much what I'm thinking. I don't think I've ever played. I don't pay $100 for just a core game, just game.
Yeah, game.
I can't say that. It has to be collectible. And imagine this is 95 money, so it's more than just $100.
That's right.
Yeah, I was talking to Zoe recently. She's really big into the old Air Jordans, the ones you didn't pump up. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was like, well, how much are there? And it's like, oh, there's somewhere between $300 and $400. And, you know, it's like, what? That's insane. These are like reproductions of the original. And I'm like, hey, these were like $120 back in the day. Mm-hmm. If you adjust for inflation, that's actually cheaper than it was then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's still crazy when you, but it's true.
Yeah, $100 is a lot. I didn't know this, but I was looking at the dates here. The online service Sega's channel went from December 14th, 1994, so Christmas of that year, and it was discontinued July 31st, 1998. So just 4 years later, it would be gone.
How could you even play this game without the manual?
I know, dude. Well, I mean, you know, whatever. You can suss out a game by playing it enough, but it's a weird thing. Now, back to obviously our core game here.
Right.
It was also we mentioned a little bit. It's also very unusual, but battery saves in cartridges.
Yes.
This was kind of a new concept, and it carried through. Right. Even the N64 era, we were getting close to never having that again. We were on our way to, you know, memory cards. And do you remember the memory cards for freaking PlayStation memory cards? I just so bad now that I think about it. There was no on-device storage. And so these cartridges, whatever they did, they had to do them in the cartridge. And the way that they solved that problem was putting a little clock battery in there and having that save your progress. Prior to that, the way you would do things sort of like this is they would produce an on-screen code, and then that code would let you go to the top of whatever level you were just on and play that way. You know, we forget when we played Super Mario Brothers for the first time, there's no saves. There's not even codes.
There's no saves.
You just start from the beginning and play until you're done playing. That's the game. And you go back and start over. If you're on World 8 or whatever, it doesn't matter. There is no save points. Like, totally
that's where the
world.
Warping was, right? That's kind of where that kind of came in later on. It's like, well, if you unlock the secret of how to save time.
Yeah, it's insane. So for basically you paid $100, you got 24 megabytes of game.
Megabytes or megabits?
Megabytes, I thought, because it's storage, bits. Not bits. Bits isn't bits, more like throughput. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm unsure. I just know that's how they listed it everywhere. But maybe.
I thought it was megabyte. Well, anyway.
Well, we're going to get an email now. That's playretroshow@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you. So 8 bits is a byte. Is it bits? 24? Yeah. Bits is data transfer. That's correct. So that's throughput. So if you said I have a 100 megabit.
We're talking in context, people. We're not talking about the, you know, actual classifications of each. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just think I'll find the cover of this thing. I think the box even says megabyte. I'm not sure.
Megabyte me.
All right. This is a
hey,
funny.
But no.
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
Here's a really good reminder for all those retro collectors out there. Hey, it's kind of expensive to get into retro gaming, and you want to protect your investment. So don't forget, anytime you are a collector and you're dealing with electronics, always consider the battery. Is the battery in it? Do you need to take it out for long storage? Mm-hmm. What's the temperature like? So yeah, this is one of those things that's really important with like Phantasy Star 4 with this onboard cart battery. You know, do you need to take it out?
Yeah, there was no permanent, you know, there's no flash memory back then. That didn't exist. Not in a retail way. So you couldn't do it the way that we do it today. You just for the record here, all of your playtime lately in this game has been on your Mini, right?
Right.
Okay. So that's a thing to note. We always talk about where you can play these games today, but one of them, and the one Brian's been playing it on, is his Genesis Mini. And that, of course, has save states built into that device. So, you know,
I love it. I have two. I have a system save state, which is built into the console. And then I have a save inside. This is, they had a save in game on Phantasy Star 4, and it saves up to 3 slots, I believe. So you had to kind of rotate in and out. And you can only save at certain points. This was intentional so that you wouldn't save and get screwed. Because you could save yourself into a no back down situation. You know what I mean? So your save would be kind of locked in. And yeah. That would be bad.
That would be very bad. I could see that.
System saves easier.
Yeah, I agree. So that's in there, and that's a great way to play it. We'll talk about more of those as we get there. Here's something I didn't know. Zio, the character Zio, is modeled after musician and frontman Trent Reznor. Is that confirmed? Is that real?
That's okay. So I was curious about this too. This is I've yet to find. By the way, if I try to source all this stuff and I'm gonna put it in the show notes. There's been talk. I've never seen anyone who's actually said de facto said yes, this was based on Trent Reznor. But I've heard a lot of rumors and a lot of people talk about it. And maybe you can point me to a place that does have it. But that picture I sent you, I think is pretty proof positive.
I'm putting it up right now, people. So there's Trent Reznor of the that's the era of Trent Reznor in the 90s. And there's the character Zio.
Zio.
You know, he's a pissed off young RPG lad, and you know, he looks a lot like Trent Reznor, I guess. I don't know. You know who looks cool now? Trent Reznor. He looks cool now.
Oh yeah, he's still holding on, right?
Yeah, he looks great. He's a bit too
somebody
busy.
Somebody remember to remove his battery and keep him a nice preservation quality.
No kidding. That guy's busy making movie soundtracks these days. That's kind of all he does. But he's a very handsome aging man. There he is, Chad.
Yes.
Yeah, look at this, Brian. I'll put it in our Discord. You can be in awe of Trent Reznor's age.
Oh wow, look at that. Look at these he's still wearing all black everything. It's
He still wants to F you like an animal, no matter what.
Yeah, he still definitely wants to F you like an animal.
Yeah, that's his deal. That's what he wants. He wants a video. He wants a video full of hanging meat, and his name is Zio. That's the guy. Anyway, what else do you want to mention here? There's all sorts of stuff. You mentioned that localization. That's always hard. But I think I shouldn't say this. Spoken dialogue is obviously hard, right? Like people have to do that. But when you talk about an older RPG like this where there are thousands of lines of dialogue, that's a lot of work, man.
It's a lot of work. And this was made by an all Japanese team who, you know, had Japanese sensibility and humor. And there's a lot of humor in this. And that is one of the hardest things to translate. So they, like I said, localization on that part, it's like, do you even consider it when you're doing the game? I would, because I'm like, oh, well, we got to be able to translate the humor, the vibe. If you don't, what's the point? Yeah. But but then you got old who was the head guy over at Sega that was such a stick up the butt. With the hair, they always talk about.
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Nakayama. That's who it was. Nakayama.
Wait, is that the guy?
He's got such a stick up his butt. And so you got all these, you know, fun, good time director, Kodama and Nishiyama.
Yeah.
And they're all having a good time. And I just can't help but think he probably just, you know, ruined it for everybody.
He is now 89 years old, that guy. 89. Doing all right.
Right.
Yeah.
89. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess being a real tool preserves you quite well.
Here's a fun note about him. Sega began developing on its next console, the Sega Saturn, but Nakayama was concerned about the release of the Atari Jaguar in 93 and that the Saturn might not release in time to compete with it. Nah, dude, you're watching the wrong, you're paying attention to the wrong feed.
That's the reason why PlayStation came in with the fastest selling, biggest selling console of all time.
Yeah, read the room, Nakayama.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Oh, but the Atari Jaguar. It looks so good. It's a Jaguar.
No, it's not. It looks like a toilet. It's the worst. It's such garbage. All right. Yeah. Another thing I was going to tell you, where is it? I lost it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I was talking about how to play earlier, and I did want to mention that this is available also. I always like to give people an option. 99 cents on Steam for one foreign thing.
Oh, yeah. Why is that only a buck? That's a dollar? That's crazy.
Yeah, I know, right? That's like, one-tenth the price of the original? No, it's one-hundredth the price of the original.
Yeah. That's an insane deal. That's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
But, it kind of makes me want to. I think I'm going to do it just to do it. Why not? Why wouldn't I buy that?
Yeah, why not? Just to say you can. And archive.org has a prototype release. There was a lot of prototypes of this game, by the way, because it had a pretty long development period. Not incredibly so, but long enough.
Sure.
And so there's a lot of prototypes out there. And you can play it on some of those on archive.org. The one that was on there is the one I saw was for Sega Gamers Day 94.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
Okay.
Gamers Day.
Remember when they did that? I remember that. It was a long time ago. Hey, it says here that there was a naked woman in this game and then they took it out for us. What was the deal there?
Yeah, there was some, so there's different races and some of the races were a little racier than other races, and the Shad Mirage,
yeah,
being nude women,
oh,
were both removed from the English version.
Okay, let me look this up. I'm just going to do a quick verification. Oh, there she is. Yeah, nude.
Yeah, she's naked.
She's nude. Hold on.
There's plenty enough to be erotic about. I mean, there's Newmans in here who were kind of, you know, somewhat human and somewhat furry cat eared thing. Yeah. So, I mean, you know,
somebody's interested. Sexy,
you got sexy androids. You got owl shaped Motovians.
Yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't hit you, maybe you're like a magician, that kind of maybe hits your, you know, your interest there.
Yeah. Do you like a magician? Hey, boy, do I have good news for you. let's see. This is kind of interesting, and I always love these stories. So the director of the game, Riko Kadama, was also known as Phoenix Rye. He's a Japanese video game artist, director, and producer employed by Sega. Says she is one of, did I not say she? I thought I did.
She, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She is one of the first noted female artists in the industry, joining Sega as a graphic designer in 1984. That is really cool. Yeah, I like when they start from nothing and end up running your game at the end.
I posted the interview that I sourced some of this information from in the show notes, and it's a really fun interview because it's like this, it's all subtitled, and there's this guy in the UK, and he's totally fanboying. But he works in Sega of the UK apparently,
yeah.
And he's interviewing her, and she's you can just tell, like, oh, ask me one more question, stupid.
You dummy.
Turd.
No, you big dummy. Yeah.
They're like having a really good time.
Yeah, no. It seems good. Sequels and follow-ups, we said, we talked about a few of these, but there was a Windows port in 2004. It was also included in the Sega Genesis Collection, Sonic Ultimate Genesis Collection, the Sega Genesis Classics, and of course the Sega Genesis Mini, which is where you've been playing it lately. Sega Ages planned a remake for the PlayStation 2 console, having revamped the first two games, Phantasy Star Generation 1 and Generation 2. I would really like to have seen that, but that didn't happen, which kind of bums me out. It is interesting, though, because as much as we've said it's had impact on other games, the JRPG market has always kind of been back and forth, like taking ideas from each other. That's pretty common.
Yeah.
Phantasy Star 4 really, I think, raised the bar for a lot of reasons. One is, and I'll agree with it even though I hate how it looks, the Mega-style cutscenes were a big deal. the macro system in there was actually pretty innovative. Most of these games are a real menu hunt, and they made that much simpler and made for really cool combos, make those random encounters less tedious. It does use random encounters. Mm-hmm. I should mention that. If you hate that in RPGs, I got bad news for you. They're in there.
Yeah.
And then they added these crazy vehicle battles. You're in this freaking tank thing, this gray tank, and when it ran into a random battle, it's always like these gigantic, freaking horrible tentacle monsters that are like tons of hit points, and you'd never take them as like people walking around, but you have to do it in the tank. Totally unusual for the genre. No one ever really did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was very, very cool.
I, I liked the macro system, though, was one of the things that really stood out to me. At first, I was like, what is this macro system thing? And then when I found out, oh, there's up to like 15 combos that you can do. So you can take you're a party of four, mostly. You can be a party of five, but usually you're a party of four. And those characters can, if they attack with their techniques, they can perform a super move, essentially. Mm. They can form into a giant Voltron. No, they can do these special moves and really just nail the enemy.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, whatever, I don't have time for that. But then when you realize that every 2 feet is a random encounter, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm hitting that macro button right there. And there you go.
Well, and there's I guess my point about them getting something new out, like making a new game, really work well. Cause I think those systems are still kind of unique. Like there's some stuff to do there that other games aren't doing. That macro system could translate to some really cool modern mechanics. And I don't know why this isn't happening. Sega's got a hell of a publishing arm now, and they certainly can, you know, get work done. So why is this thing? I mean, maybe it's because it kind of still is kind of a little known. It's less known. You hear Final Fantasy, you go, oh, I know what that is. I heard of Final Fantasy. Even if you don't play games, you know what that is. But if you hear Phantasy Star Online, Phantasy Star 4, or just Phantasy Star in general, people get confused. They don't know. You know?
They don't know nothing.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe our chat room is full of useful knowledge about this game as well. I love our chat room. They're always so
they're great.
Knowledgeable.
And yeah. They're sexy too. They're really hot.
Sexy. Oh, yeah. So sexy. Look at that.
Yeah, look at the text coming out of those people. Amazing. We talked about all the places you can play it. I would recommend if you have the Mini, that's the place to do it because it's a pretty authentic experience and feels real good. I'm going to fire mine up and play this game because Brian got me going on it.
Yeah.
So it's a hell of a thing. Phantasy Star 4. Now, you're sitting there thinking to yourselves, don't you guys have a game you play called Guess My Game? And I would say,
oh,
yes, we do.
Destroy it.
All right, we're going to play Guess My Game. We take an old game and try to stump each other as to what it might be. I'm going to start here, Brian, and play some sound of this thing. Oh, first, before I do that, the battle theme is also cool from Phantasy Star. Listen to this. That is some Genesis-ass Genesis sound right there is what that is.
Love it.
Holy crap. All right.
That's blast processing. Yeah, pump up your kicks.
Yeah, get it in there. All right, here's mine. This is 1980, okay? Arcade. All right. It's all I'm going to give you, all right?
All right.
So here
that's
you
all
go.
All I need.
Enjoy.
I know this.
You already know it?
No. Yes. But it's locked in my brain, but I can't. Oh my god, I can't picture. Wait, I've only played this game like a million times. What the crap is it?
Arcade. Let's see what else can I tell you. Vector. I'll tell you that. Vector graphics. Vector. Yeah, Vector graphics was the engine or the type of game. Any guesses?
Well, Vector Graphics 1980 is going to be one of a handful of games, and we've talked about it here. Is that Battlezone? Is that...
That would be... Incorrect.
Oh.
The correct answer is Star Castle.
Star Castle. Yes, Star Castle.
Now, I have a sneaking suspicion. I did this one on a previous episode of The Boop Show where we did this segment, but I don't
care.
Maybe
that's why I feel like it's...
I don't care because I like it and I wanted to play it again. I actually really don't remember if I did or not. But Star Castle was this very cool game. Instead of you attacking a thing.
Oh, yes. You kind of played this game.
Yeah, you kind of had to work your way out of it. And it was multiple colors and not just the screen with tape on it, which is how a lot of color was achieved back in those days. I don't know if anyone ever played like old Space Invaders. Star You're like, Castle. Oh, the top row's red and the middle row's blue and the bottom one's yellow. And when they shift down, they shift colors. That's because there was literally translucent tape on the monitor. And it was black and white. Isn't that nuts? Nuts.
It is. Wait, when anyway. Is it? But, you know, we got to do what we got to do, man.
No, that was the time we had to figure stuff out. So Tondragosa says choplift. Jeff, definitely choplifter. The joke continues.
It's always
choplifter.
The joke that'll never die.
It won't die. Now, I'm going to play yours. I'm going to see if I can guess this. I'll see if I can win this week. Here we go. Oh, wait. What's your gear on this?
1983 is the year.
All right, 83.
Head on down to the arcade, my friend.
Here we go. I'm going.
shoplifter.
I know this.
Yeah, you do. That's what makes this game so much fun. It's like, I know this. Dang it. I know this game.
Oh. This is, you slide the root beer down the thing.
Is it root beer?
Well, wasn't it? Hold on. Root beer tapper.
Maybe in your
root beer
sanitized...
Root beer tapper.
Root beer tavern?
Yeah.
Guess it. No, root beer tap. Nope. It was his tapper.
Oh, wait.
Beer drinking.
Hold on. I thought there was a... Hold on. Root beer tapper.
Sarsaparilla tapper.
Okay, root beer tapper game. I swear this was an arcade game. Oh, okay. So what that was
one
was
technicality.
No, I got it. What it was is this is why I remember it. My dad had one of these. Inside the machine, there were dip switches like all of them had for like free play and test modes and... cranking things up, and you know, it was a bunch of dip switches in there, and if you knew what to do with them, they were always really fun to mess around in there, except sometimes you get electrocuted, so you have to be careful. But in Tapper, you could set the dip switches to be beer tapper for the bar people who buy the game and have it in their bar,
right?
Or you could make it root beer in the game, and that version went to like kids arcades
and to church,
Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, church. But like a Chuck E. Cheese would have a root beer tapper in it, whereas the bar down the street would have a beer tapper, and it was the same code, just some graphical changes to make it root beer instead of beer. That's what it was.
Interesting that they had Budweiser like on the wall of Tapper. That's such a weird.
Yeah.
It had to be the first time we had seen something, you know, like a real brand name in something like that, because that's something I want to talk about in the future too, is branded video games like Pepsi Man and that kind of stuff. It's just weird that,
it's weird. Pepsi Man is really weird. That is
Pepsi Man is so wild.
Dude, that's one of the weirdest things ever made. We do have to talk about games like that.
Root Beer Tapper. See, I never saw Root Beer Tapper. Yep. I never had the,
So this is the version of Root Beer Tapper, although this may not be maybe it is the arcade one. But I see it in both ways. Right. There's Beer Tapper, Root Beer Tapper, and the Root Beer Tapper machine, the Beer Tapper machine, okay, the one that had beer in it. It had a different controller. Let me share this with you. I'll put this in the chat as well, or up on screen so they can see it.
Oh, but basically, that's right. It had the controllers it had the controllers like you were literally a bartender. You pulled your little...
you'd pull that down to pull the beer down, and then I guess you'd use it to then hit to the side one direction or the other, and that would fly the beer down the table.
Right.
The root beer tapper version of this had the same controller, but it didn't say Budweiser on it. it's something else. Yeah. Anyway, dude, Tapper was great. That's a great game.
I want to know a little bit more about the history of it. I don't know if we could do a whole episode on it, but I would definitely like to know, was it partially funded by Budweiser? Was it with collaborative? What was going on there? How'd you get away with that?
I love these kinds of details. So for sure, what we ought to do is some kind of like, hey, when did products start showing up in the games in arcades?
Trivia episode.
Yeah, that could be fun. So we'll see what happens. All right. Well done, everybody. That was a lot of fun. Now this.
Welcome to the treasure room.
Hey, it means it's time for an email. We've got emails here on the show in the treasure room, as that guy says from Gauntlet.
Welcome to the treasure room.
It's such weird voice things back then.
You did a great, really good job of sniffing out some good clips.
Well, that's what I do. I sniff clips, and then I get the stink, and then I have to do it.
Ooh.
Here's an email from, who's this from? Kendall, who says, what is retro anyway? And then the message is this. Brian, by the way, playretroshow@gmail.com. Playretroshow@gmail.com. Brian and Scott, I am very excited about your new show. Retro games are everything to me, and knowing two of my favorite podcasters are taking this on is very exciting for me. Well, that's nice of you, Kendall. Thank you.
That was, yeah.
To my question, I think is what he means, of what makes a game retro. he wrote it weird, because it says, to question of what makes game...
He wrote it like he was doing localization for Phantasy Star 4. It's perfect.
That wasn't me. Anyway, he says, I think anything before 1998. Don't know why. Just sounds right to me. Kendall. All right. Well, there's one way of doing it, and that is just picking a year, and I understand that. And I think that's an okay year to pick. But the other day I was having this conversation with, I think, Garrett or somebody in our circles, and they said, Well, I think it's when there was kind of any kind of internet connectivity possible.
Right.
And so the last consoles that had no option for that would have been Sega Saturn, PlayStation 1, because the 2 had an adapter you could buy. It was add-on, but
right.
You could buy a modem.
I don't consider any of them that would just did it as a gimmick. I wouldn't consider that. The gimmick to me is like, no, not yet.
Yeah, well, it was definitely a not yet moment. But then again, I did play some games online with my Dreamcast, and it was just over a phone, and told everyone to get off the phone because I'm playing freaking football, whatever the hell
get
it's called.
Get off the phone!
I was playing 2K, NFL 2K. And it worked, and it was very interesting that it worked at all, but it wasn't super practical or simple or anything like it is today. So yes, but that maybe those don't count if they're add-ons.
I do it like I do with whenever we have this question about generations. So we always hear, oh, well, what does it really mean to be in Gen X or baby booms or whatever? You know, what are all those generation names really mean? It means to me, it's a very personal experience. We all experienced in our generation events that occurred at a certain point in our lives, whether we're like having kids, getting jobs, that directly influenced us at that time. Yeah. And we all have that shared experience. That's what makes us a generation. We experienced, let's say, like we experienced the, you know, 9/11 at a certain stage in our life, and we all experienced it together. And we were all scared because we had kids or that were young or something very specific that impacted a group of people at a very specific time.
Yeah.
And so
it just gets more muddy.
Kind of retro.
It gets more muddy with video games because there's somebody right now listening who's 15, and to him retro is that 360 his uncle had. And that doesn't seem very retro to me, you know, like that seems very not retro to me, but part of that is because I don't have it in that frame of mind like he does. So So I don't know. It's a shifting thing. It's not meant to be, you know, static, I don't think. I think it's different for everybody.
And whose word is retro? Because there's also old school and classic, and there's these different terms. Retro is popular with our generation, essentially, in coming up. So, you know, would that word get replaced eventually? You know,
how about this?
Maybe retro will always be retro age.
How about this? How about... that doesn't work. I was going to say when DVDs hit around 1998, maybe he's right about 98. Maybe that's the year.
98 feels like a very good, because it's a few years before 2001 here in the US. That was a real major event that happened. It affected all the generations in America. Maybe in some of the same ways, but in different ways as well. And so we definitely were different people prior to that.
Oh, for sure.
So,
including Richard Pryor. He was very different back then.
Yeah, he was very much different then.
Yeah, prior to Pryor. Hey, that's a great email. We love it. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com. Maybe you at home have some ideas about what retro means. Send them in and tell us and ask us any other questions. You have games you want to suggest? You have parts of it. We're not talking just games here, by the way. That's the other thing. As you noticed, we went kind of deep on some Genesis stuff. Sometimes it's like a whole series of things. Sometimes it's a single moment. Sometimes it's a game itself. Like, we're going to cover it all. And I'll give you a good idea what's happening next week. For example, this is a bit of a turn over the last two episodes. We're going to look at the Donkey Kong series in arcades as a topic. So Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr., and Donkey Kong 3. There was never a Donkey Kong 2. Technically, Jr. is the 2.
Right.
And when those
Junior's the two, you heard it here.
When those ended and Mario started going off on his own, the world changed. But up until 3, it was all about the monkey. And we're going to get into all of those. I, in particular, not a lot of people even know about 3. I kind of like 3. 3 features no Mario, or at the time, Jumpman. He wasn't in it. Neither does DK Jr. But in 3, you're going up against Donkey Kong again, and you're just, I forgot the guy's even name. We'll know it next week. But the little dude with the spray thing, he's shooting bug spray up the butt of the monkey. It's amazing. It's an amazing game.
Monkey.
Yeah.
It's a fun game. I remember it, and I played it.
I actually quite like it. I actually really legitimately like it as an arcade game. It's a little simple, but whatever. The point is, we're going to talk about DK Jr., and DK 3, and just the mega impact that that line would have into the future. I mean, look where we are now. There's nothing bigger than where Mario came from. Nothing bigger in video games. It's the most recognizable character on this planet. Why? What weird place to start? Where did it go from there? We're going to get into all that and specifically look at those three games and look at what they did to their respective genres. That'll be next week right here on Play Retro. Now, a quick note about our Patreon. So far, you guys have been awesome. Thank you for joining up. We got plenty of cool reasons to join up. Bonus content every week. Always an ad-free experience, no matter what, for you patrons. And stuff you're not going to get anywhere else, like Brian's unboxing his Atari Fight Stick. It's in the thing right there. It's already up. If you're signed up, even for like as low as the buck entry point, whatever it is, you already have it. You've already seen it and you're loving it. And we're going to do more of that stuff. So go read about it. Check it out. Find out why it might be for you. That's at patreon.com/playretro. We're also Play Retro on Twitter. And frogpants.com/playretro is our website. Brian, is there anything else that... Oh, this music's nice. I'll turn that on. Hey, anything else you want to say or mention or do here at the end?
Absolutely. If you're interested in watching us play throughout the week, I do stream Monday. Well, no, now Tuesday through Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Every night I stream on twitch.tv/Brian Dunaway. I'm usually playing something retro. Nice. And it may be some DK. We'll have to see.
Ooh, I might be wanting to play that this week as well.
Donkey Kongs.
Anyway, we'll see how that goes. I also have finally got a PS5 coming my way, so we'll see what I end up doing there.
What?
Yeah.
Did you get two?
Nope. The person that swung this deal only could do the one, and then I barely got that. So luck played a huge part.
I need another person.
Luck is hard, man. Luck is hard to come by. But it's finally happening. So anyway, I love it. Love this show. Love having you guys on board. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back next week with more Play Retro.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Oh my god.
Oh, why did I use that? I don't know what I was thinking.
What was that?
That's a bad idea. Yeah, that's what that was.
Lord.